Welcome to this very special episode today of the Career Confidence Podcast. I'm delighted to tell you all that today is a recording of the full live event that we recently did in Melbourne, Australia. And wow, get ready, because if you missed the event, if you couldn't make it, this is the whole panel discussion, which I am so excited to share with you all. So I just want to do a really big shout out to Georgia Patton, who's head of strategy and commercial at Coles, Colleen Pender, who is head of technology at NAB, and Karen Sims, who is the CTO of Telstra Super. These women shared their knowledge, their wisdom of how exactly they got to where they are in their careers, the challenges that they come up against, their mindset, what drives them, what does really good leadership look like, and how to navigate common challenges that women face in the workplace. So I really hope you get so much from this recording. Once again, thank you to everyone who came. Thank you to our sponsors, 7-Eleven, Unisuper, CH Talent Solutions. These events would not be possible without your support. So enjoy. And as always, let me know what your biggest takeaway was.
Actually, before we move into hearing from these incredible women, I actually want to acknowledge that we've actually got a solid male representation in the room this evening. And I really want to acknowledge that, because we need our male allies. Supporting women's career growth, it's not solely a women's issue. It requires active participation and allyship from men in organisations, and a commitment to advocating for gender equality. So the men in the room, thank you so much. We've got Steve, who is the CIO of Unisuper and has been a huge sponsor for our Sisterhood Club initiative. So thank you very much for your attendance this evening. It means a lot to us all. Thank you. So over to our incredible women. So look, I'm actually really excited to get into this evening and really soak up everything that you're all going to share with us this evening about your own career journeys. So it's over to introductions, and I'm going to hand it over to you yourselves to introduce yourself to the audience. And yeah, Karen, you're to my left, so I'm going to start with you. Over to you.
All right, thank you. My name is Karen Symes. My current role is Chief Technology and Operations Officer at Telstra Super Fund. And it's nothing to do with Telstra. So we are run separately to Telstra. Look, my background has mainly been financial services for the last 30 years, but I have had stints in heavy manufacturing, which I loved, in the steelworks and in the UK, and with L'Oreal in the UK as well. So very different, but the rest of my experience has been very much a broad aspect of financial services. So,
hand over to you. Thank you. Hi, everyone. Georgia Patton. So my role's head of strategy and commercial at Coles 360. Prior to that, my role was head of technology strategy and governance at Coles. So looking after all of the investment planning for and aligning tech investments to Coles's business strategy. But my background's in like a very traditional technology background. So did maths and computer science at uni, engineering, and then went into like architecture and various leadership roles. That's a little bit about my background.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Colleen Pender. So I work at NAB. I've been at NAB for 14 years now. I never thought I'd say that in any company. So my role at the moment is on a project. So I'm head of technology, looking after the test environments and production support. NAB purchased the Citibank Australian Cards business 2 years ago. So I've been on that for the last 2 years. Obviously been at NAB for a long time, and I've probably changed roles every couple of years, but it's always been in tech, and I started my career as a computer programmer and then sort of worked through analyst, project manager, into the roles that I've been doing more recently. Thank you. Amazing. Let's just give up for our panel.
Incredible. So I have a quote that says success leaves clues. And there's a reason why you all sat here today. And I want to really try and dive in and identify the patterns and what's got you to where you are today. So Georgia, I'm going to start with you. Can you sort of take us back? Because there's a lot of girls that probably, me myself, I didn't want to study maths when I was a young girl. So what were some like early influences that really encouraged you to step into mathematics, technology, and really got to, I guess, get you to where you are today? If you could take us back to those early years.
Sure. When I was at school, it did definitely start with like an interest in STEM subjects. When I was looking to select like where to go to uni and what to do, at the time, my cousin actually suggested doing something with computers. I'm very like curious by nature, and I'm always learning. And I think just it kept my options open going down the path of technology. So that was probably the earliest influence for me. But yeah, definitely, I think I went into it really like very, very confident. I think having gone, been in school and done well at school. So it was a little bit of a shock to the system when I think in my course there was one female to about 50 males at the time. So this is like over 20 years ago now. But that was really the path that led me to getting into technology.
So Karen, back to you. You're in a C-level role, you're a CTO, and one of the main missions that Georgie and I have is to really encourage and inspire women in tech to get in the driving seat of their own careers and to encourage as many women as possible to throw their hat in the ring to step up into leadership roles. That's the feedback that we get from our clients, is that there's a lack of women that are putting themselves in the ring to step up into these leadership roles. And that's what we want to really try and foster, that sort of gap. So could you sort of walk us through the key experiences that you feel have shaped your career and how you feel that you managed to sort of carve that career out for yourself to land yourself in a CTO position?
Yes. Look, when I was at school, there was no computing, right? So I'm ancient. And there was no computing at school. So, but what there was evening classes for people to try computing to see if you had the brain for it. And that was really interesting because people were being picked based on aptitude back then. Okay, those days are long gone. And I went and sailed it. I don't know why, but it just seemed to fit the way my brain worked. So I was very lucky in getting into, first of all, programming. I was training to be an accountant at the beginning, so I had maths. I'm glad I got out of it because no way would I have stayed as an accountant. Apology to all accountants in the room. But having the opportunity to find out that I had an aptitude for this was really great because I didn't look back from there. And what I've found in the workplace is as computers started coming in to do jobs that people did manually, I would always put my hand up and my bosses at the time would go, "Well, you do it." You know, they were still working it out themselves. And of course, it just went from there. I just had the aptitude for it. I always put my hand up to operate the computer back then. And then I never looked back. So I started with programming, but I'm morphed into network engineering somehow. And I think that was when computing went into servers, file servers, and end user computing. So because I was there, I just got into it. So I'd done the programming, the operations, the network engineering, and then into project management, and then into leadership. And I guess that was the past for me. But for my generation, I was probably the only female. There were often times when I was the only female in the team and I just had to push myself. And I bet I was paid less than everybody else in that team, but I never knew it at the time. And yes, there was imposter syndrome. Of course, you're just the female in the team back then. I'm talking, you know, 30 years ago. But I just had to take it for the opportunity, you know, and then I've grown from there. But I have to say that leadership comes in many forms and it's not for everybody, okay? The running a function and running a large team of people, that's not the kind of leadership that is for everyone. So if that's not for you, don't feel like a failure at all. There are other paths of leadership, in technical leadership, in delivery leadership, and things like that, that you can take with your technology knowledge. It's not every leadership role ends up in a chief of technology. Many, many paths to leadership.
And we're definitely going to dive into all of that. So, Colleen, I just want to come to you as well. Again, your backstory. So, like you said, 14 years at NAB, that is quite the commitment. So, can you just sort of give us a few sort of like, I guess, insights into that story and how you transitioned and how you, I guess, have constantly just sort of stepped up, maybe sideways as well at NAB and got to where you are today?
Yeah, sure. So I'll probably start with my current role. That's maybe the most funniest story. So I've been in my current role for 2 years. And before that, I was head of tech as well, but looking after enterprise change in the bank. So high pressure, all the change, tech change came through my team. And I'd been doing it for maybe 3 or 4 years. And it was getting a bit BAU, you know, when you've been doing a role for a little while. Still, you know, interesting because we'd still have high severity incidents, but getting a bit BAU. And I had the best manager that I've ever had in my whole career. And she, her name's Tracy, and she sat me down one day and said, "Colleen, I think it's time that you left the nest." I'm like, "What are you talking about?" And she said, "There's an opportunity that's come up with this Citibank migration, and I think you'd be perfect at it. Go and meet this person and have a chat." And then chats led to another chat. And before I knew it, I had a new role. So when I sort of was reflecting on this question and this path, I think a lot of it for me has probably come down to maybe two or three key things. And I think number one is having that sponsorship and that support. So Tracy, I'd worked with her both directly and indirectly over a number of years. She knew my capability. She knew my strengths. I'd helped her out a number of times in very difficult situations. And so, you know, that loyalty and support was there. So when an opportunity came up that she thought, "Oh, hey, that suits Colleen and what she's passionate about," you know, she put her needs aside and my career in front and sort of push me forward for that. So I think for me that was number one is having that sponsorship. I think the second thing when I go back to my previous roles is through networks. So I think I haven't really had to push too hard to get a role. It's sort of usually helped by having someone who's known me, known of me, or know what I'm about, what I'm passionate about, that has kind of helped me get into that role. So I think the second thing for me is that networking. And I think events like this are great. And I was talking to a lovely woman, I'm not sure where she is now, earlier, but you know, we were just talking about that putting that that time aside in investing in yourself by coming to these events. And it's not about, you know, "Hey, can I have a job at your company?" But it's understanding, you know, the person next to you, what they're passionate about. And as time goes on and you're thinking about either your career or their career, you can kind of start connecting the two. And the third thing that's always been a big part of my career is education. So I've gone back to uni, you know, more times than I probably care to talk about. That's another problem. But I think, you know, having that passion for learning, and it doesn't necessarily need to be a formal certification. It can be, you know, on the job training or, you know, through a mentor relationship. But that love of learning and that strive to be better and learn more helps, especially for me, with confidence. So I think, you know, we talk a lot about imposter syndrome and am I the right person, et cetera. I think for me, having that knowledge and building different hard and soft skills actually helped me in feeling confident to go for those roles that maybe my male counterparts were thinking, I'm a shoo-in because I meet 2 out of 10 criteria, and as women we only meet 8 out of 10, let's not apply. So things like that I think can really help in building your confidence and just putting your name out there. Thank you.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. You've actually just dropped a couple of nuggets of gold there that Georgie and I actually preach all the time. There can be something so powerful about someone saying, you're ready, you can step up. That's incredible. And the power of the professional networks, and that compounds over time, you know, who you know and that power of connection. So thank you so much for sharing that. Colleen, question for you all now. What are some of the biggest challenges that you have all faced as women in tech? How did you overcome them? And now at this stage of your career, with a wiser head and shoulders perhaps, is there anything that you would have handled differently or navigated differently to make that path a little bit easier?
I think to build on what Colleen was talking about, I think one of the big challenges is that progression, whether it's been due to the fact that you feel like you're not quite ready to take the next step, or you don't have all of the skills that a job requires. I think the way that I've certainly been able to overcome that, and something that it's probably taken me longer to learn, really is by being very mindful of the people that you surround yourself with, because you can be attuned to people who really are your supporters and who are going to sort of help you in your career, whether that's people that are willing to like pull you aside after a meeting and say, can I give you some feedback, because I really believe in you, and let you know things that you need to know. But also I think the sponsorship piece is really, really important. One thing that I wish I had known much sooner, that has really worked for me more recently, is just being really mindful about the prioritization and outcomes, and being really focused on the outcomes in terms of the business outcomes that I need to drive, and really what's going to move the dial, whether that's for me individually or for my team. And I think just being really attuned to your key stakeholders, because once you start to be really focused and then ruthless about your prioritization, that then also kind of that momentum builds, and it builds your confidence, and also your you sort of attract those sponsors as well. Karen?
Thank you. Look, as I've gone up the leadership journey, I think influencing, it's been really interesting trying to influence in a male-dominated environment. I almost think you need to learn to speak men, because we do communicate differently. And it's hard to influence when you might be the only female on a senior team. So learning how to do that, and maybe thinking I need a different strategy here. I think I might need some one-on-ones so that I garner some support before I go into the den of loneliness in this environment, and just appreciate that, you know, it's not wrong. Men and women typically do come at things from different angles. We do communicate differently, and you've got to learn that in order to get your point across and to influence. I have had some amazing leaders in my time, some sponsors, absolutely incredible. Most were men, one was female. And they've been the more kind of gentle souls. Possibly they had daughters. I don't know, but they were amazing, and they gave me opportunities, or offered, and I took the opportunities. And I think that's part of it, is you've got to take those opportunities. You've got to put your hand up for everything. And the influencing one, I think, break things down to small chunks. Try and get some kind of trust in people and say, I've got this amazing idea, but break it down into tiny chunks and show somebody. just don't talk about it. Actually go do it and say, hey, look what I've done. Let me show you this. And then people go, oh, okay. They'll see an outcome and then you'll go and do the next little bit and show them again. And gradually you'll build that trust. And people say, oh, she knows her stuff, actually. And, you know, and it's just working with your audience, thinking, I need a different way through here. I'm not getting cut through. And, yeah, you, and it's all situational. Every team you go into has got a different dynamic. So you've just got to navigate that and be smart enough to think, what dynamic am I in here? You know, what's the culture here? How do I play this? And be adaptable to that and try something new. It's been my experience.
Yeah, just what I really resonate with what both of you have said. I think the challenge is that, you know, that communicating, you know, with men. And it's really interesting because when you said that, some of my initial response was, but I want to be authentic. You know, like I want to talk the way that I talk and, you know, everyone else can just deal with me. And then, you know, the more I, you know, heard what you're saying, the more I was sort of thinking, well, actually, it's just another communication style. So, you know, if I'm talking to a visual person and I'm giving them a 10-page report, that's not going to work. You know, I need pretty pictures, I need graphs, et cetera. So if I think about it as the style of that individual, male or female, and look at tailoring my language to suit that individual, it's all stakeholder management, really. You know, working out what style resonates with them, what language, you know, and I've heard in lots of training, I don't know whether it relates to you ladies as well, but, you know, women tend to start with, you know, things like, I may be wrong, but, or I think it could be this, but, you know, and the body language changes and the language. And so people hear that and straight away think, oh, well, maybe she's wrong, you know, as opposed to changing language. I've thought a lot about this and here is my idea. And just using different words to your audience, to put strength and conviction behind what you're saying, male or female. And I think the challenge, you know, for people and myself included is having a softer nature or being more, you know, introverted might not be a natural style for you and you're trying to be authentic to you, but it's also sometimes you have to a role to play. So, you know, finding a way that you can do it that's authentic to you, that feels okay to you, but you can be successful and get your point across. And doing that is a skill in itself, you know, like programming and all those other skills that you need in your day-to-day job. It's a skill that needs to be learnt over time.
Yeah, just to follow on from that as well, the biggest thing that we get asked for now when we're hiring is we want people who are good communicators. And it's communication means different things to different people, but I think you've got to really understand what is the outcome that you're trying to achieve, and different people communicate in different ways. So some are visual, some like, you know, email, some like calls, some like Teams, some like face-to-face. It's like understanding who's a stakeholder you're trying to impact, right? So that's so, so powerful. I want to get more into leadership now, because obviously there's a lot of women in the room that really want to step up into leadership. So I'd sort of love to know, like, how would you all describe your leadership style, and how do you personally motivate and inspire your team to achieve their best? So, Colleen, you've got the mic. Perhaps you could go first.
Yeah, no, it's a great question. I think for me that authenticity again comes up. So for me, it's not asking the team to do anything that I wouldn't do. So that's very, very important to me that, you know, if we're working on the weekend for an implementation, you know, that I'm there too. I'm there with the team, because I think that helps build the relationship, build the trust. I think being open is really important too, because when things go wrong, and they will, you know, all the time, especially on my project, you want the team to be honest with you. You don't want them hiding things from you, that you don't want them saying, oh, everything's great, or, you know, the watermelon project. Have you heard of the watermelon? Yeah. You know, you want that honesty. So I think having an open conversation, checking in with your team, how are you, how's things going, both from a personal side and a work side, I think it helps build that trust and that relationship. So I think, you know, it all comes down to, like you said, that communication. And I think for me, I'm probably tend to lean towards more that servant leadership. So, you know, supporting my team, protecting my team are very much what I'm about, because with the projects that we're on, they're long projects, they're complex, they're, you know, long hours taking people away from, you know, family and personal commitments. So you need to build that sense of team and enjoy some of the fun activities as well as, you know, being there in the trenches, you know, midnight on Saturday night, ordering the pizza, you know, keeping the team motivated. I think they're really important things for me.
So I think very similar. I would say that I have quite high standards. So my team know this. I have high standards, but also provide very high support. And my focus really is on being super clear about like the objectives and the outcomes and like what those proof points are along the way or lead indicators. And then much more of like a coaching and building capability style. But I think that no matter what role you're in, and I've gone through different stages in my career where I've, you know, had very, very large teams to then stepped into individual contributor roles. I really do think you can be and demonstrate a leader irrespective of sort of having formal leadership responsibilities. And I think that really stands out, those people that, yeah, display those like leadership competencies in sort of whatever like circumstances you encounter.
Yes, the servant leadership resonated with me. That's definitely my style. It's my role as the leader to have a clear vision, set achievable objectives, support the team in succeeding and get out their way. They're a capable team. You've got to build that capability. But once you've got a capable team, it's growth, growth, growth. Grow your team, provide opportunity, grow them sideways, grow them upwards, expose them to the board. I've now got probably 80% of my leadership team now having exposure to the board, so it grows their career. I want to move on to something else, so I need them to step into my role. So it's every role I go into, I think, right, where's my successor? Let's grow this team. Because if I don't replace me, I can't move to my next thing. And some of the poorest leaders I've seen are ones where their bench strength is very poor. And it's almost like they think as a good leader, there's nobody to replace them. And it is so wrong. So go in there, build your team, think there's my successor, move them up, move on to your next thing. And it's really important to set your team up for success. Those objectives have to be achievable, but they've got to be empowered, trained, move blockers out of the way. When the whole agile transformation came along, it's almost like there was an epiphany for me overnight that something I did naturally actually had a name. And it was like, here's my calling. The world has caught up. This is now, somebody's put a name on my natural leadership style. So it was wonderful to have that become mainstream. So that's my style with my people.
Thank you so much. And calling midnight pizza sounds pretty attractive. Sign me up.
Thank you so much for listening to today's podcast. I wanted to quickly pop in and talk to you about our amazing supporter, CH Talent Solutions. We are an IT and digital recruitment company based in Australia. If you are someone right now looking for a new opportunity or considering a career pivot, please reach out to one of our consultants. Or if you are somebody looking to build your team or build your company or scale, again, please reach out to us if you are looking to find the best tech talent fast. I look forward to connecting with you. Now back to today's episode. Enjoy.
I do find like leadership really fascinating, because I do think that we all can bring different qualities, different styles. I know that we actually have some new female tech leaders in the audience. And also, I know that we have a few women that have shared that they do have ambitions to step up. What advice would you have for those individuals? Like, what would you encourage them to work on in order to prepare them for their leadership role in tech? Karen, you've got like, off you go.
Well, leadership in tech is an interesting one for me because what I used to call the toys for boys, this used to be, and I was a girl who liked the toys as well. Tech for tech's sake, to me, is just not doing technology a justice. It's all about how you use the technology in your organization to achieve its objectives. So learning change management, absolutely critical, because every technology project has change attached to it. If you want people on your side, then you need to learn how to do that really successfully. And I mean in a lean way. I don't mean overcooked change management. I mean in a lean, agile way, making sure that your audience that you're going to impose this change on is going to come along with you. The other thing is understanding value-based prioritization. Don't do things that don't deliver value. So really focus on the corporate objectives. Have a look at the technology enablement that this project or change that you're delivering is going to deliver to that corporate scorecard or the corporate objectives, and only do the 80% that delivers value. Move on to the next thing of value. Don't try and go down every single item on the list until it's tied up with a pretty bow, because it's just not delivering value down the other end. So focus on value, absolute sharp focus on value. So it's not about the tech, it's about how it enables the organization. So that's my advice, is be smart in knowing how that technology is going to grow the organization, satisfy its customers, and deliver value.
Yeah, I definitely think there's a lot of like formal leadership training that are almost table stakes, like things like being able to delegate, which tends to be tricky for new managers stepping up. But I think in addition to that, I think really being able to self-manage as well. And for me personally, really practicing to be low ego, I think that is really important, because it enables you to really be open to feedback and to really seek it out continuously. And I think it also allows you to really continue to learn and be open-minded. So that I would say is another thing that I found really, really useful in making that leadership journey. And then just try different things, learn new skills, try them out, see how they land.
Thank you. I think I agree with all those, and I'm secretly taking some notes. So I think the only two things that I think I'll add to that is number one is probably around volunteering, or getting your brand out there a little bit, and that can take lots and lots of different forms. I think it's about showcasing your skills. So if there's a working group that's been set up with a few different teams, maybe it's something like a social club. That's a good way to start, that you can maybe showcase some of your influencing or your marketing or whatever that's needed for that particular group. Or it can be something, maybe it's more of a tiger team where you're trying to solve a problem. But I think volunteering and getting involved in cross functional teams, I think, can be really helpful in getting people to know who you are and what your strengths are and how you come across as a person. The other thing that has been really powerful for me is getting feedback. So when I was starting to get into to more sort of senior roles, I would often have a colleague in a meeting that I could connect with and I knew would be honest to me. So I might say, hey, look, we've got this next meeting together. Can you just observe me, and can you give me feedback of how I was after the meeting? And that was really useful, because sometimes when you're talking, you might say a lot, and you might we're going to talk now, and you don't realize that you're doing it. And so sometimes having a trusted ally there that can say, hey, do you realize that when you talk, you always start the sentence with, I may be wrong, or I'm really sorry, but. And it's those sorts of cues, which you might be really strong at the tech and know your stuff, but how you're presenting yourself is maybe not the best reflection of yourself. So I think have a look at getting that feedback from someone that you trust and you value their opinion to help you become more aware perhaps of your blind spots. And you may decide that you don't want to do anything about them, and you're quite happy with that, or you might decide that you want to address that because you feel that it's holding you back.
Solid advice. I'm taking notes as well, by the way. That was awesome. But language, body language, especially the language you use, it's absolutely key. So yeah, incredible advice there. So as some of you might be aware, I've got a podcast. It's called Career Confidence. And I called it that for a reason, because I honestly do believe that self-belief and confidence are the foundations for when it comes to career success. So confidence is a skill. And I get asked a lot, I want to be more confident. How can I be more confident? So I'd love to know what you three have all done to really boost your confidence. And it is a journey, and part of it is pushing yourself outside your comfort zone. So I'd love to know from you first, Colleen, how have you gone about building up the self-belief and confidence in yourself?
Yeah, so I think for me, it's been study, it's been education. Obviously, a lot in tech, and a couple of years ago, I was building a house. By when I say me, I mean I was paying it through the bank, and someone else was doing the brick activity. But I found in that industry, it was actually quite similar to some of your starting career comments. But you know that team that I was working with, that particular builder, they were very male dominated. There was a lot of love, pat you on the head, you don't know what you're talking about. And so the way that I addressed that is I went back to uni and did a diploma of building construction, because I thought, well, you know, how hard could this be, really? That's kind of, I guess, my approach being to life. Whenever there's something that I feel not confident about, or something that I want to learn more about, I go about and learn it, because that means that I can ask, you know, more questions, the right questions, and help me to develop further. So that's been a really strong part in building my confidence and taking me into those next roles, whatever they happen to be.
I think for me, taking risks, and it's been something that I've started to do a lot more of than certainly what I did early in my career. Early in my career, I was a bit more risk adverse and can easily get really stuck in my comfort zone. But I think by taking risks, again, it starts to pay off, because you'll do something that you feel really uncomfortable about or uncomfortable with, and then you'll surprise yourself that you can actually do it and be successful. So I think that, yeah, if I can sort of like give any advice, really just try and make sure that you're uncomfortable if you're in a position where you're not learning as much, or if you haven't, you know, learned in the last 3 months and you can really sort of like see that your learning curve is starting to like plateau, like look for the next thing and just keep moving and try different things.
I think language is important here. I think the word experiment is a really, it gives you permission to fail as well as succeed. So what I've done part of my influence and trying to get confidence that we're trying something new, but let's experiment. You give me something that you want to see in this experiment and I'll show you. And if it doesn't work, we'll go down the path you wanted to go down. But I'm convinced we can do this differently. So that word experiment makes it safe for everybody. It's a word that allows people to fail without ego. And you can list your success criteria. You could say, what would success look like if this experiment was to pass? And what would it be if it failed? So that, and you might be wrong as well. So it gives you the courage to try something new. And it also gives the other person some kind of permission to say, you were right there, that I'm okay with that, because you've proved it to them. So that word experiment, I think, is crucial in gaining confidence in others and putting yourself out there a little bit in a safe way. That's definitely what I've used.
Well, thank you so much. Let's move on to the future of tech. I just used the word Colleen, no video, you know. What is your vision for the future of women in technology, and what steps do you think that need to be taken in order to achieve gender parity in the industry, like either from doing it as what impact can we have as individuals? What impact can organisations have in order to achieve that?
So first of all, I think things like this are amazing. Like, it's really nice to have places where people can come together and you can meet other people and form those connections. But I have to say, in terms of the future, we're still, progress has not been as fast as I think all of us would like. Women are still very much underrepresented in technology. I'm very hopeful, but I do think that, like, certainly like organisations, and it's great to see some male allies in the room. I think there's a huge role that organisations need to play in being very, very, like, meticulous with watching over the data of who are they hiring, who are they promoting, and really ensure that there's just ongoing data-driven focus on that, because those conscious and unconscious biases do play in, and there are a lot of systemic sort of issues. And I think then secondly, the role of male allies is just absolutely critical. So I think I think it's around 70 to, I really wish I'd looked this stat up, but it's around 72 or 78% of men, when asked, are they supportive of sort of female empowerment and women in technology, they indicated yes. But when they look at the data points on whether they've actually taken action in, like, the last month, the numbers really fall to kind of like under 20%. And so I think really being very clear about the role that male allies can play and the actions that need to be taken, whether that's passing on a CV at an opportune time, or really having sort of male leaders sponsoring like an exceptional female and helping them sort of like move their career. So I think that is really critical to drive the change that needs to be made.
Thank you. Yeah, I really resonate with some of those comments, and I think that male sponsorship is really important. At NAB, they do have metrics around that, so they do have targets around how many women they're trying to get into some more of those senior roles. And when I first heard about that, I was quite annoyed about that. I thought, well, you know, why should we have that? And I knew it was actually causing quite a bit of angst with some of my male peers, because they're thinking, well, you know, the females aren't good at those roles. They're just the token females to meet the metric. And so over time, I think my view has changed a little bit on that, because when I've worked for managers who have been very conscious about, when they're doing interviews, sort of getting a 50-50 split of male and female candidates, very conscious of when they're writing job ads, the language they use, because there's certain language, you know, I don't have the stats, but certain language that appeals more to men than it does for women. For the managers that were actively doing those steps and actively trying to get the balance and the diversity in their leadership team, you see that they actually achieved it. Whereas the ones that ignored the metric and didn't take any account tended to not have that. So as much as I hate having that metric and that token, oh, you're the token, you know, woman, or the token 30% or whatever the metric stat that they're looking for, I find that without that, it tends to go backwards. So until we come up with a better way to do it, and I know you know, NAB and UniSuper are probably similar, you know, trying to get involved in, you know, the younger generation, reaching out, you know, doing STEM programs at schools, at universities, you know, women in tech programs within the company, that without those things, that we're not at a position where it just naturally happens, that we need to have some of those proactive steps. And I think that's just the way it is for this time.
Yeah, 6 years ago when I joined Telstra Super, I think 8% of the technology team were female. I think my CEO deliberately put a female in charge. It upset a lot of people. mainly the guys. But it was for a specific purpose because the environment had become, according to my boss, very blokey, quite toxic. Not that men are toxic, but this particular environment had become that way. We're at about 35% females in technology now, and we continue to find it challenging to get females in cloud engineering, architecture, and cybersecurity. There seems to be few females in that space. And as I alluded to earlier, it's less about the technology these days, it's more about using it. And I think women are really good at that part of it. So if you look at the future of tech, the value is in how we use tech to grow the organization, satisfy our customers. So it's not about the engineering side of it anymore. That's, if you work for a technology company, obviously that's a bit different. But if you work for a normal organization that's core business is not technology, then I think females have a big role to play in the enablement and looking at the customer. They tend to have those naturally more soft skills. So that would be my advice, is don't be afraid of the tech. Look at what it's for. And that's where I think women can play a big role in technology in the future.
Love it. Thank you so much. Final question, then we're going to go to some Q&As. So looking ahead, there is going to be so much change across technology over the next couple of years. I don't know what the world's going to look like in 10 years' time. It's kind of scary sometimes. So what can we all do in this room tonight to make sure that we are staying ahead and we are future-proofing our careers? Is it AI? Is it Web3? Like, is it soft skills that we should be developing for ourselves? Like, where should we be paying attention to if we really want to keep progressing in our careers? So Karen, you've got the mic, over to you.
I went to an AI session in Sydney the other week, and it was really interesting because the lady there from CSIRO, fantastic speaker, it was female, generative AI was the topic, and she said, just take what's currently coming at you with a pinch of salt and just learn it and get on with it, because when quantum computing comes, the whole thing is going to go off the planet. So she said, don't resist the current Gen AI. Just get with it. Use Copilot. Use whatever you've got and get with it. Make it part of your life. Don't take it too seriously. It's based upon what humans have created originally anyway. And you still need a human in the loop. So treat it like your assistant. And that's what I've told my people in my team, where we're putting a bit of AI in to help. Said, we've always got more work than we've got capacity. So this is your assistant, and treat it like that. It's not replacing you. It's allowing you to do something else. But you have to embrace it. There is absolutely no option but to embrace it, because what's coming next is enormous. I don't want to frighten anyone, but that I frightened me, and I'm thinking, oh, God, I'm glad I'm being retired. Oh, geez, what a world.
I have to say, being in technology at the moment, I think is the most exciting time, like, that I've certainly seen in my career, just the pace of change. Absolutely, like AI, ML, anything that you can do to just continually sort of build your skills. Look out for where there's shortages and, like, be strategic about it. And then I think really where the big opportunity is where there's people that can bring together all of the foundation skills, whether that's understanding sort of like end-to-end process and like value streams, and seeing where there's opportunities to sort of insert AI into that, to design processes around AI, to look at the user, like be very kind of like user focused and human centered design focus, to look at how it's used. That's really where there'll be like a lot of value created, and where the opportunity will be. And I think with that opportunity, it comes individual choice for you in terms of the career you can have and the opportunities.
Thank you. I think having understanding the technology is super important. That's got to be number one, whether it's AI, whether it's quantum computing. I'm going to have to study up on that. You know, whatever's coming, you know, I think obviously embracing that. But I think, as you know, and we've all seen it, and it's just been extrapolated, you know, now with the hybrid working, being able to communicate to people that are in different locations, different cultures, speak different languages, being able to explain technical things in a really simple, easy to understand is critical. So having that communication skill, having that adaptive nature, so being adaptive to change, embracing change, you don't have to be at the bleeding edge, but you know, feel the wave of change and getting on board, I think is going to be really critical. And also, you know, look at your catastrophe scale, you know, so you're going for a new job, you know, you do it and you fail, you know, so what? You know, just try and put that into perspective a little bit more about trying something new, putting yourself out there. What's the worst thing that can go wrong? And then, you know, hopefully your scale is, oh my God, I'm going to, you know, fall off a cliff, and actually sort of bring it back to, well, what does that mean? And how do I mitigate the risks associated with that and just keep moving forward?
Amazing. Can we just give a quick hand for the panel? And then we're going to go to some Q&As. Amazing. Thank you. Questions. Who has some questions?
Hello. Good evening, everybody. So, I'm a senior cloud engineer, and I see my next role is a cloud architect, and I don't find any women I inspire from in this role. I didn't find any, and in my team, and I see everywhere the cloud architect all men, and I inspire from them, and I try to learn everything and do stuff, and I feel like I put all the check boxes and I have everything, but still I didn't get that role. So how can I let the people believe on me that I have that skills? And sometimes people like so much cross question that you go into the self-doubt that maybe that's what not for you. So how can you make people believe on you that, you know, you can be a cloud architect? Or
it's really hard. I know my core discipline, like what I kind of fall back to, is architecture, like solution. I've spent the bulk of my career in like solution architecture and enterprise architecture. And I didn't realize that until like many years after it happened, but I actually remember seeing an enterprise architect when I was working, and I thought, oh, that looks like a really good job. Like I'd really like to do that. And I'm, in hindsight, I'm not sure if I would have picked the path had it not been a female and seen it. And it was quite funny because then 10 years or so after I'd become an enterprise architect, I bumped into this person, Suzanne. And I said to her, like I told her the story that I saw her, and then I was like, and she was like, now you're living the dream. But it is true that you have to, I think you have to see it. It is really hard. I think I would be very happy to connect with you and to introduce you to, I know one female cloud architect, but also just if you can be, I know that's sort of really sad, but I think architecture is a great like career and field. If you can, I would just encourage, there's other pathways as well into it. So I've got other examples of business analysts that have moved into business architecture and moved into enterprise architecture. So I think I would encourage anyone who's got even the slightest curiosity, get involved. But, yeah, just seek out, leverage your network, seek out people, because, yeah, you'll find that most people want to help.
Yes, I would encourage you to, at your next performance review, or you don't even have to wait till then, is demand to be put on a project and just say, I really want to lead a project. I have the skills to do it. I've done all the background. Here's my runs on the board. I really want to be put on the next project. Pick a small one just so that you overcome those barriers. Pick something and say, I want this. Because unless you say, typically when somebody asks for something, they will get it, but you have to ask. And think how many female architects there are for buildings. All you're doing is creating something beautiful in a system. You're actually architecting a solution. There's plenty of women in who are building beautiful buildings, so why not beautiful technology solutions? It's no different, but you have to ask for it. You really have to ask for it.
Can I just build on that? Because I think that is such an important point. I think the more specific you can be about what you need, whether that's really being specific about what do I need to be doing to set myself up for the next time an opportunity comes up, and to really hone in on those specific examples, because I think that's a big unlock. Yeah.
I'd probably just say maybe just, you know, if you can get some feedback. So, you know, I understand I wasn't successful and there was a better candidate, but, you know, what's something that I could be working on over the next, you know, month, 6 months, whatever, that would set myself up. So if that role came up next time, that I would be more of a front runner, because you don't always sort of know the background. Like, you know, we might be assuming it's about you, but it might not actually be about you. And you might be beating yourself up and feeling unhappy when actually it's not about you. So sometimes it's kind of good to have that conversation. I think if you frame it in a positive manner of how can I be better, or if this role came up in another 6 months, what would you like to see from me to demonstrate that? Because I think if that person, you know, sort of, you know, cares about you and cares about your progression as well, it's very hard for them not to answer that question. So I think, yeah, I think ask the question, but just sort of frame it in that positive manner, so that they don't feel that, you know, you're being negative, and that may hold them back from giving you an honest answer. Yep.
Hello. I'm sorry, you're all my role models. I hope one day to be able to, you know, ascend to the heights that you have. When you go into a job, whether you're an entry-level person or stepping into a company with your peers, more often than not, to do well or even to progress, you have to adhere to the culture and learn the habits of the company, whether it's learning to speak man or to be as dominant as your colleagues are to be able to progress. I'd love to hear, I mean, you've been in the industry for quite a bit before getting to where you are. What is one of the things that you've identified that you've had to, one challenge that you've had to overcome, so that potentially now in your position, did you take an initiative to change it? You know, and I think sometimes that if I get to that position, I love to change a lot of things, but until I get there, I'm still at hearing.
Yeah, great question. I'm not sure if I answered all of it, but I'll give it a go. So I think for me, when one of my early roles in the bank, there was very much a divide between partner resources and internal resources. And I think that ended up having a negative impact on the projects that I was on, because the team felt that. And one of the things that I was very big on is building that collaboration. So I would have direct conversations with partner resources, and maybe not go through the hierarchy and all of the rigmarole that had been put around it. And that really, over time, that really changed how the partner resources felt in the team, and it ended up being a more positive outcome for the project and sort of changing the culture. Changing culture is really, really hard. And it's hard to do it as a single person within a team. They talk a lot about, you know, the fish rots from the head, and you know, all of those areas where there is a bad or toxic culture. And in some cases, I don't know that there's anything you can do about that if there's a lots of people that are forming that culture. But you can start with your immediate team and start working about how do you start to turn one head, two heads, three heads. But it's not always possible. And if the culture is very toxic, I think sometimes the best thing may end up being to walk away.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I've got too much more to add than that, other than
I do feel like very early on in my career, I really did just try and fit in a lot because I did feel different. And I do like regret that in a way. I think you can take back like some of the power. Like it is really hard to, as you've said, it's really hard for one person to change the culture. But I think in hindsight, I wish I had called it sooner. Like I think there are times when I should have just like moved on. So I think if you can like just focus on those skills that are in demand and then like vote with your feet, because the companies that are really like really taking diversity and inclusion seriously will generally also have like a better cultural environment.
Yeah, the values and the culture of an organization is there's a difference between them being a set of words on the wall. Everybody's been through those, here's our values. But what you've really got to ask is, explain to me how that value is demonstrated in the day-to-day working of this organization. Because there are not many companies who take the word on the wall and play it through their everyday actions. And culture and value fit's really important. There's a balance between how much you adapt and how much you lose your authenticity. So that whole value, prove to me if we've got a value of one team. Demonstrate to me how one team is played out in this piece of work and how do I fit into that? And ask about it. Yes, you can vote with your feet, but you may find that you end up going to every company and voting with your feet. There may be a point at which you think, I might need to lead this a little by saying, hey, the value on the wall says one team. I'm not seeing much one team here. What could we all do differently? This is how I would like to work. Would you be able to try that, you know, and see if you can find some like-minded people? And I've worked in amazing cultures and horrible toxic cultures. And yeah, sometimes it's just impossible. Sometimes you have to walk, but sometimes it's borderline and you might have to show your own bit of leadership in getting those words on the wall, being congruent with the action on the floor. It's just that sniff test, pub test, whatever you call it. But that's what I've got.
Thank you for the very engaging conversation. Very inspiring. My background is AI, and I've worked AI, built AI, started 20 years ago, but really working this industry for 15 years. And being part of a big enterprise corporate, I sort of did climb up the ladder to the director level, but I sort of took an opportunity to actually take a break after 13 years also. But now that I'm sort of, I have this chance to do some self-reflection and think about my priorities and my values, I'm sort of getting self-doubt of actually, do I want to become an executive? Because when I was in the environment, that was the only goal I had. But for various reasons, it didn't happen. And I just decided to take, part ways. But now it's all about, okay, I have my kids. They are, you know, they're just in primary school. Am I going to get this time back with them again? Because I didn't take that time when I actually had them. I just took a 6 months maternity leave with my twins. And I'm not regretting it. This was the decision I made at the time. But now I'm thinking, okay, so do I actually want to do that? At the same time, I'm thinking next 10 years is probably the biggest sort of push I want to have. So I know it's a very cliche question about balancing, you know, life and work and kids and everything and family. But what is your advice as executives?
Well, I think COVID has helped us all there. I would say leverage that like crazy. The number of people who are now much, much happier and are having that amazing work-life balance, kids and doing work, makes for the more loyal employee because they can focus on their life and focus in sharply on what's required for them in their role. And if your background is in AI, you should be calling the shots now. And don't worry about not wanting to be an executive. It is not the past for everyone. And it doesn't mean to say you can't be a leader in something else. So if you've got that background in AI, you've got a fantastic opportunity to lead the way. You've got a head start on a lot of people.
So I would look at ways of leveraging that and work your work from home and your balance in the office so that you can keep that work-life balance. I think COVID is your friend. I don't know how it would have happened otherwise, to be honest.
Yeah, look, I think it's a great question, and I think it's a question we all have asked or will ask at some point in our lives. I don't think that there's any simple answer and advice. It really depends on you. But I guess, you know, you want to think, well, in you know, 10 years from now, 15 years from now, what am I going to regret, or where is going to be, you know, my biggest thing looking back as to, oh, I should have done this, you know, better, different. And, you know, sometimes it's possible in the right company, you know, with, you know, part-time execs, you know, certainly seen it. It requires, I guess, you know, a culture to the earlier point that actually supports and encourages that, which, you know, is possible, but can be difficult to find. But I think if you're considering that, I think going into it, you need to think about what is your principles and values, and what are the boundaries that you're going to put on it? You know, so if you are going back to, say, to full-time work, you know, what are those boundaries look like for you? So it might be, well, you know, I'm only working late one night a week, or, you know, Tuesday and Thursday have to be my work from home days because I'm picking up the kids or I've got this and that. So I just think if you're going into it, think about what are those boundaries going to be for you? Because you don't want it to get back into maybe the situation you were in, you know, before, and then before you know it, you know, 2, 3, 4 years have gone and you're thinking, I've been working every night, I've, you know, missed my kids. You don't want to have that regret. So what are you going to hold true to yourself, and what are you going to hold yourself accountable to week to week? Have I met my target this week of your personal commitment?
Amazing. Can we just give a hand for the panel? Incredible.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you've got this far, that honestly means the world to me and lets me know that you've got a lot of value from today's episode. So if I could just ask you to do one thing, pull out your phone and please leave a quick review. It honestly would mean the world to me. It will help this podcast grow and get our message out there to more people. So if you could do that for me, that would be amazing. And please reach out and just let me know what you want to hear more about, what you're interested in. It will just also help me make sure that I'm continuing to speak to topics that are relevant and also find guests that are real true experts in what you want to know more about. So have an amazing day. Thanks so much for doing that, and I can't wait to share the next episode with you.